Hello everybody, this is the translation of Joel's message for Sunday the 14th of August. The reading is taken from Matthew chapter 15, verses 21 to 28. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him crying out, "Lord, son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly." Jesus did not answer a word. So his disciples came to him and urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me," she said. He replied, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." "Yes, it is, Lord," she said. "Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." And her daughter was healed at that moment. This story takes place at a time when Jesus is in Galilee and has just been confronted once again with the Pharisees and the scribes, with these suspicious men and their trick questions. They are convinced that they are the best and they are specialists in the condemnation and rejection of others, of all those who are not like themselves. And once again, Jesus will bring out all the hypocrisy of their approach. And he will, above all, in total contrast with these Pharisees, demonstrate his extraordinary capacity to welcome. Here, to welcome a foreign person and to welcome the faith of this foreigner. I suggest that we go through this story in five steps. 1. Jesus is recognized. 2. The silence of Jesus. 3. An obstacle to prayer. 4. Remarkable faith. And 5. The miracle. 1. Jesus is recognized. Jesus goes to this region of Tyre and Sidon to withdraw from the crowd, and there, as a simple anonymous visitor, is quickly spotted. He is recognized by a woman from the region. This woman is a Canaanite, therefore a pagan. But she has heard of Jesus. She calls him Son of David, and that is already a lot for a pagan. But this title that she grants him shows that she recognizes without a doubt that Jesus possesses a certain authority, a certain power, and that he is able to intervene in her situation. Her situation is a terrible tragedy, an unbearable misfortune. A girl, still a child perhaps, dominated by an evil that leaves her internally bruised and probably physically too. And it is through a prayer that could not be simpler that this mother comes into contact with Jesus. A prayer in 4 words, "Have mercy on me." With this cry, she said the essential thing about her present need and of her vision of Jesus, who is certainly not unknown to her, even if it is the first time that she is face to face with him. This reminds us that prayer is not necessarily a long speech. So I would like, just in passing, to ask a little question on our behalf, without being in Jesus' place. Are we those who are easily recognized by others, those who, even discreetly, remain available and within the reach of others? Are we those to whom others do not hesitate to turn to say, "At least you, I know that you will listen to me, that you will know how to give me a little of this attention and this respect which I need so much at this moment." May God help us to be those outstretched hands towards each other, in the church and outside. The next stage of the story is the one that may surprise us the most. 2. The silence of Jesus. Faced with such a prayer, Jesus is silent. He did not answer her a word. This woman took the step of expressing her expectation without detours in a few words. She clearly explained her situation and she only met with silence. No echo to her call. We could speak of the silences of Jesus in the face of the Pharisees and some of their questions. There will also be the great silence in front of his executioners at the time of his condemnation, and which inspired the prophet Isaiah centuries before, when he speaks of a silent lamb before the shearers. But here there is a silence in front of a real need, a real search, and there is urgency. And on top of that, this woman may have heard the disciples urging Jesus to send her away, because they only see her as a parasite disturbing the comfort of their journey. For an answer to her request, this grieving mother therefore receives nothing but silence and words of rejection. But even if Jesus is silent, he is there. His silence is in any case not synonymous here with absence or indifference. In reality, Jesus does not necessarily seek to fill the void of silence in the face of suffering like we sometimes do, we who seek too quickly and at any price to give an answer. Jesus does not open his mouth, but his heart is not closed. And we will see that he finally has for this Canaanite woman something even better than an immediate response. 3. An obstacle to prayer. Indeed, when Jesus finally breaks his silence, he then gives it nothing but a definition, the definition of the limits of his mission. And it is to hear what she already knew that this woman hears the first words of the Lord, namely that she is not part of the family and that she does not have the right, as she is not of the house of Israel. This may seem harsh to us, to say the least, and the expression of Jesus is even totally exclusive. I was only sent to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And then Jesus does not stop there. Immediately after a new attempt by the one who begs him, we have the impression that he locks even more, that he reinforces the barrier that has just been erected and that he confirms the segregation. In addition, Jesus seems to add to the feeling of exclusion that of guilt. It is not good, he says, to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. The reproach after locking her out, when this woman returns to the charge and insists in terms of the greatest simplicity, "Lord, come to my aid," and in the greatest humility, she prostrates herself before him. We would gladly believe that at this point anyone would have refrained from insisting. Even in the greatest distress, any mother concerned about the well-being of her child could have understood that there was nothing more to hope for on that side, and that it was urgent to seek help elsewhere. The situation of the Canaanite woman perhaps reminds us that the path to God is not always comfortable. As children of God, we too can be confronted with certain silences from our Father, or even certain refusals which seem incomprehensible to us at the time. So we can ask ourselves the question, why was Jesus so emphatic and apparently so harsh in his response to this woman? What must be emphasized first of all is that Jesus did not play on words. What he said here was indeed the truth. It is true that his ministry was for the people of Israel, but by coming among this people he had come to his own, as John says, and it is his disciples that he will send later to the nations. And these first words reveal nothing other than the Lord's concern for fidelity to the mission entrusted to him. Remarkable fidelity and obedience of Jesus in his service, but which does not confine him to any framework, because his love has no framework. In reality, this Canaanite woman is no stranger to Jesus. If Jesus redefines the initial framework of his ministry, Israel first, it is obvious that he does not discriminate between peoples. Remember that God's ultimate project, the one he announced to Abraham at the very beginning, is the blessing of all nations. And Jesus will then call his disciples to be his witnesses in Jerusalem, in Judea and Samaria, and to the end of the earth, Acts chapter 1, verse 8. And to make disciples in all the world among all peoples, Matthew chapter 28, verse 19. Jesus goes far beyond social or religious affiliation. He knows perfectly well what is in the heart of this woman. This woman made her choice, the choice to turn entirely towards the one she finally has the privilege of meeting. And Jesus, for his part, made the choice to let faith express itself. He does not discourage with his words, but he holds out the pole to a determined faith, which only asks to be shouted with all its might. We can perhaps sometimes have the impression of waiting on God, when it is he who shows great patience towards us and who awaits the expression of our persevering trust and faithfulness. The silences of God, or the barriers that he seems to impose on us, are not made to paralyze us, but to stimulate us in our faith and in our attachment to him. They are, in fact, spaces that he reserves for us where our freedom and our will can be fully exercised. It is in our interest that God allow time for our faith to take root, to mature and to bear fruit. And it is an exemplary faith that amazes us in the heart of this woman, a remarkably anchored and living faith. 4. A remarkable faith. To think that this woman, through her answer, is a person who is satisfied with little, would be to be seriously mistaken on her account. And it would be to miss the message that she leaves us, an elevating consciousness of grace, at the same time as that of her own unworthiness. This is the secret of this pagan who left her mark in biblical history. We can find in the Bible many images of grace, some very poetic, like that of the stream of God which is filled, of the river which flows. Here it is to another image, more prosaic, but just as magnificent, that the words of this woman send us back. Starting from the image of the bread which she takes from Jesus, the bread which is given to us every day in the most ordinary reality of our existence, the bread which nourishes and which is the source of life. She arrives at the image of the crumbs. In fact, she imitates Jesus without knowing it, whereas one day spoke to her of faith, like a grain of mustard seed, and which would be enough to move a mountain. She speaks here of the crumbs of God's action, which are enough to heal, because she understood that the gifts of God cannot be measured, that there is no question of dosage when God gives, and that the crumbs of God are worth infinitely more than all the riches of men. She understood that everything that comes from God is a pure gift, a perfect gift, as the Apostle James will write, and that there is no second-choice category in his gifts. She understood that the benefits of God cannot be limited to a place or a people, but that they can only abound and reflect on all. This woman's motto, grace without borders, this is something that can lead us to a greater recognition, considering that everything that comes to us from the hand of God, even if only deposits or first fruits, to use an expression of Paul when he speaks of the Holy Spirit, is already for us, in our measure, a fullness. And the fifth stage of the encounter, it is, of course, the fully open hand of God for her. It is 5. The miracle accomplished. A miracle, one could say, without much brilliance, without particular gestures, without Jesus even going to the patient, but which attests, in addition to the deliverance and the victory over the demons, the reality of a real encounter. What is remarkable in the context of the time we have understood is that Jesus also responds favourably to a stranger, to a woman. But what is even more remarkable is the testimony that Jesus bears to the faith of this pagan. If he can declare, "Your faith is great," it is obviously lies, because she was able to hang on and persevere in her waiting. But it is also to signify that such faith is a fine example of conformity to the thought of God. If Jesus can say, "Let it be done to you as you wish," it is not to suggest to her that her will prevailed over that of God, and that God ended up yielding to her entreaties, but it is to confirm that her request responded perfectly to God's plan of love for her. By her confidence so solidly established and by her tenacity, she joined the very heart of God, of this God who was waiting for her and who had prepared her to receive such a gift. In conclusion, what if God today, above all, expected from us that our will join his? If our God expected our perseverance in prayer, a prayer lived not as a means of pressure that we can try to exert on him, but a prayer assured in advance that his response will be commensurate with his love for us, a patient prayer that accepts that God will make this ironclad faith mature in each of us, a faith which not only does not weaken before appearances, but which brings us ever closer to him, which pushes us to want what he wants and to join him in all his projects for our life. Amen.